Hola, my name is Elias Torres, host of the American Dream Podcast. On this show, I talk to underrepresented founders and seasoned executives who have achieved their versions of the American Dream. We discover their origin stories, their career trajectories, and their biggest lessons learned. On this episode, I talk with Eva de la Rosa, a strategic marketing executive with experience at Fortune 500 companies in Wall Street. We discuss the influential power of school counselors and teachers in helping you find your why, the different ways to define a network, and the importance of creating agency in oneself. Plus, we find out how small the world really is. Let's get into it. Good morning. How are you, Eva? Thank you for being on the show.
I'm doing well. Thank you, Elias, and thank you so much for having me. I'm really pleased and excited to be here with you today.
Yeah, we like to tell stories about other immigrants or Latinos or first generation, you name it, people that we want to share with our audience a story. I want to just leave a record, right, of great people that have achieved great things in this country, right? So where are you coming from today? Where are we recording?
I'm based in Brooklyn, New York. I've been living here for over 10 years, but originally from Los Angeles, California.
Excellent. So tell us a little bit about that Los Angeles. Tell us about where everything began.
I am the daughter of Mexican immigrants. I was born and raised in Los Angeles. I'm the youngest of five siblings. I grew up in working class, blue collar neighborhoods. They were primarily Latino in Southeast Los Angeles. And my family has always been very hardworking. We're closely knit. We love to celebrate tradition. We love cooking. We love making fun of each other. And we're fiercely loyal to each other. I also attended all public schools in Los Angeles, also first-gen college graduate, attended Stanford University for my undergraduate studies, and Duke University for the MBA program.
Wow. Well, there's a lot to unpack there. The most important one that grabbed my attention is we like to make fun of each other.
Yes.
Is that why do we have two types of people in the world? Those that want to be made fun of and people don't want to be made fun of.
It's all in good fun, you know. It's we do it with heart, and you got to banter a little bit if we're going to live with each other for the rest of our lives. We might as well have a little bit of fun. So, very humorous, well-intentioned family for sure. You got to take the ups with the downs and the serious with the fun.
Yeah, sometimes, there was a period, I don't know if it's still happening, but a lot of the comedians were getting canceled for making a joke, right? And I remember seeing one of them or something and saying, like, our job is to make fun of everything. And, and I was like, I'm in for that. Like, what can we make fun of? You know, I live in Boston, in New England. You cannot make a joke out of anything here. They're super serious.
You got to have fun. You got to live a little, you know?
Yeah. No, now my rule in life is like, if you don't like my jokes, then I don't want to do it. Goodbye.
We love your jokes.
Are you still funny? How does that work? Do they like you being funny?
You know, it's interesting. I inject self-deprecating humor into my everyday. To some extent, I view it as a form of humility, which I believe in, but it also breaks the ice and it invites others to not be so serious and to really be invited to be themselves. So it was some coaching that I actually picked up on from a mentor of mine years ago throughout my career in terms of how to invite people, especially as you grow into your career and you manage people. You don't want to be that intimidating, you know, leader and manager. You want to express your humanity. So I use self-deprecating humor quite a bit, and the fact that I can laugh at myself, I think, is healthy. So I'd rather laugh at myself than necessarily have someone else do it for me.
I flip to the other side now. I'm a rage. Was a rage bait. You know, I always drop in the meetings just like the most obnoxious things, you know, so that way just to see if I can get a rise. I love getting a rise to people. I think that's a Nicaraguan thing. Maybe it's not a Mexican thing.
Keep people on their toes. Rage bait?
Yeah. Do they do it?
I think so. I mean, I shouldn't generalize, but I think, you know, we're okay with drama, you know, and inciting a little bit. We like action and enthusiasm. So I think I would agree with you on that.
Okay. So we all do it. Perfect. Great. All Latinos do it. That's awesome. So, Southeast LA. There was a period in my youth. I went to Southgate Junior High and Southgate High School. Yeah.
I lived in Southgate. My mom lives in Southgate.
No way.
Small world. Yeah. Yeah.
I lived in San Vicente.
San Luis. Neighbors.
Oh my God. What?
This is too uncanny. It really is.
This is crazy.
It is very crazy.
I would cross the tracks there, you know, that Firestone building. Yes. I would go to the junior high. I went there.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
The neighborhood's changed.
I don't know when you say Southeast LA. I'm like, I don't know what region is that.
Huntington Park, Southgate, Bell Gardens, all of those. Inglewood.
Cutahay.
That's right.
Cutahay. Okay. So like,
what
my
small
dad.
World.
Wow, that's crazy. That's my first immigration into the United States. You know, I was like 86, 87. I was like, you know, I was like 11 years old. You know.
Okay.
I did a little bit of school there.
Although I should say that although we lived in Southgate for quite a few years, I attended a school in Huntington Park, so just next door. By the time my family moved to Southgate, I was already in the middle of all the high school activities, so thankfully it worked out. But I'm very familiar with that whole Southeast region. It's home. It's so now you know where I'm from.
I know exactly. I know exactly. Yeah, no, absolutely. That's great. I mean, like, my dad had a little insurance in a strip mall, like insurance and tax accounting services and
notary.
So like that whole area. So I know exactly the area. So you go from there to Stanford. How did you know about Stanford? Who told you about that? How did you apply? Were you like that crazy nerdy, like I'm studying, I'm not like.
I was balanced, but I will say that I was focused as well. So to answer your question in terms of how I even heard about Stanford, there's a college counselor in middle school. She's fantastic. And she, you know, put us on to the different programs nationwide. And for me, it seemed very far-fetched, right? And I saw the brochure, and the brochure laid out a very beautiful campus. And that was my main criteria. And it's in California. And it's a safe distance from my parents. So it's the best of all worlds. I didn't realize at the time, though, that what a fantastic place it was. I was just going by the optics of how beautiful the campus was. But truth be told is, and now that you know where I grew up, I don't know that I had a lot of opportunities outside of academics, right? Like, I'm first gen. So as well-intentioned as my network was, I didn't have role models in the sense of like college graduates or even, you know, corporate alums, so to speak. So for me, academics was what I leveraged to advance, you know, my youth and ultimately into college. I wasn't great at sports, so I couldn't leverage that. So I used academics to really fuel my curiosity, to really pour myself into knowledge and to developing critical skills. Because again, the things that were going on in some of my neighborhoods weren't the healthiest. So. Yeah. Going back to my family, my upbringing, my parents, very loving, but also thankfully very strict and disciplined. So I had to finish my homework before I could watch TV, and I had to do my chores before I could do anything else. And so looking back, I'm incredibly grateful for that discipline. And it really was that discipline and their strict demeanor that allowed me to, you know, stay the course. And hard work as well. I was always surrounded by hardworking communities. And so that I did have as a role model for sure.
Yeah, no, it was crazy because it was, there was a lot of gang, everything was gang related, right? And it would be like, there was that draw of like, I, as a Latino, my dad, I didn't grow up with my dad, but I spent like 2 years with him there. And you're looking for an identity as a kid.
Exactly.
You know, I came from Nicaragua and I'm Nicaraguense, but then it was like, most were Mexican, you know, descent. And then you got the gangs. And I remember wanting to dress up with the white shirt, the baggy pants, the Cortez, and I would be like ironing. I remember one time I ironed my shirt, you know, with the crease in the middle, white thick shirt, you know, and my dad just like, I think he slapped me or something. Right? He was just like, beat the shit out of me and be like, you're not dressing like that. You know, you're not ironing, you know.
to this day, it is a look that I appreciate, right? I think there's a guy, Willie Chavarria. There's like a,
yes,
you know, and I'm like, I appreciate the Chicano culture. The cars. I appreciate
the heritage.
I love all of that. You know what I mean? It's like I have a special love. I got to meet and appreciate the Mexican culture there a lot, right?
But
it was a thin line, you know. You like one, I didn't want to get beat up to be initiated. I was like, I'm not good at sports. I'm not good at fighting. Yeah, and so I was like, I'm not doing it, and I stayed away from it too. I know exactly what you meant, but it's what congratulations going to Stanford, right? I mean, it's really hard to get there, right?
So thank you. I'm also a person of faith, so I think it's by the grace of God as well. You know, definitely hard work, but you always have people pulling for you, all kinds of mentors and sponsors. And like I said, the discipline instilled by my parents, even though they didn't have a college education, the values they instilled in me in terms of self-respect and discipline and working hard, to this day, I carry with me. And so I'm really grateful for that.
Absolutely. Same thing, you know, same background as well. And I think that that's a really big point. I always say, I have all the counselors, all the teachers in all the schools that I remember them. Some of them I remember the names now, but they were like huge impact.
Yeah.
In my interest in mathematics, and it was in Southgate. It was Cervantes. It was a professor, high school teacher, Cervantes in Southgate High School. You know, pushing me to take algebra, geometry, algebra 2, and doing work with me, giving me extra assignments. You know, it's like those things is just have come such a long way, you know, from that little bit of effort that man put there, right? So,
and I hear you on that. One of the things that I'm most grateful for is those truly phenomenal teachers I had in the public school system in Los Angeles. You know, there's a little bit of everything, so to speak, right? But to your point, there are some teachers who saw things in me that I didn't see, especially at such a young age, and that pushed me. So to your point, the algebra, the calculus, I was in there for office hours. And it really was because of them that I was able to, you know, believe in myself and go to a place like Stanford. And so a big shout out to those teachers who saw the best in us when maybe we didn't at that young age.
You went and got an MBA. You know, it's like I usually make fun of MBAs.
Really?
Yeah, I'm anti. In some ways, it's like, yeah, it's complicated. We need education, but I feel like nowadays what we need more is like the youth and the new generation is more like a desire to work, a desire to do things. It's not like the what, but it's like to have that inner desire within you.
I think for many of us, our inspiration is from our why. Like, what is that higher calling, if you want to call it that, or what is your purpose? And so for me, just to elaborate a little bit on the MBA, and I know that we're on probably the other side of the table on this, but, and maybe this is at a specific point in time, but my first true love was actually in public policy and urban planning. And it's because of the lived experience I had in the neighborhoods we just talked about, right? So when I went to Stanford, that's actually what I majored in. And after college, I had a few roles in the public sector, so nonprofit, government. And it was really through that experience that I realized that where I draw fulfillment is being of service to others. Like, I just knew that pretty quickly. Through all of that public service work, I also realized that it would behoove me to go in and pick up some formalized business skills if I wanted to diversify and expand my, you know, career. And so that's when I decided to enroll in the MBA program at Duke. And for me, still now, truly, it's been a great investment, a lifelong return, truly. The critical thinking skills, the independent thinking that we're able to develop was one of the main reasons, actually. I wanted to walk away with the confidence of how to analyze a balance sheet, income statement, accounting, all of the things that I hadn't been taught as an undergrad or in the real world. But being able to do that with some pretty brilliant minds, peers, alumni, faculty, for me, there's no proxy for that human connection and that real life intelligence and experience they bring. Yes, I could Google this, but it's just not the same, right? Yeah. Granted, it's a big investment, but I also believe that an education is what we put into it, is what we get out of it. So that was my mentality going in. And the lifelong network, again, there's no proxy for the resources, the contacts, the experience that, you know, we can access. Again, you know, it's not for everyone, but at that point in time, and even now, I still see the benefits. It's also allowed me to learn how to be a more effective and trusting business leader. Being an accountable leader was front and center in that MBA program and in many others as well. And it really has allowed me to like penetrate, you know, corporate America and pivot and weather the storm and climb and all those things when I didn't have leadership roles. So for me, it's worked out really well, but, you know, times have changed. So it may not be for everybody.
I mean, I think that the results speak for themselves, right? And so,
did you change your mind on the value of an MBA? Yes,
I did. You did, right? Because, like I said, you can't argue with results, right? I just feel like sometimes people go very purposeless, aimless, right? They're just like, I just need an MBA, and they think that the MBA will yield all these things automatically, but it's you, right?
Yeah, you have to put the work in for sure, and you know, I paid for it, right? Like, I didn't have anyone else paying for it. Again, I'm first gen, mm-hmm. So I took time off after. By time off, I mean from school, after college, right? I worked. I wanted to be sure about what I was going to do next because it was going to be pricey if I went back to school. So you really have to be deliberate about it. And for some of us, you know, it's a great alternative in terms of expanding the career. So
yeah, I'm just like a big, I don't know, it's the Latino in me. I'm a big like... You have to earn everything through working and you learn the most on the job itself.
I hear you.
And I feel like all your grit that comes from Southgate, from Huntington Park, mm-hmm. I think is truly the essence of you and your parents and your faith, right? That that help you do all that stuff. The rest is that you had the agency, which is like, yeah. You know, to be able to leverage all that stuff. No, that's awesome. So, I think you mentioned about network. Network is something that I struggle with a lot. In some ways, you know, there's people that are connectors and they're like, Mr. Like, I'll text this person for you. Right. I'll put you in touch. You know, and you're like, they have like this Rolodex, right? They have this address book of like all the people. And I was like, that's their thing, right? It's like, who do they know? Who can they ask a favor for, right? And people dream of that network and want to build that network. And I just feel like imposter to say, like, I have this network when if I cannot spend like a certain amount of time with you, if all I do is record this podcast with you, then like, is he on my network or not on my network? Right. I don't like to like demand things or ask things. You know, I'm always like, I want to build a stronger relationship, right?
That's right.
I'm anti-networking from that regard. And people are like, you have a big network. And I'm like, I don't know what my network is. You know, it's like, I just know the people that I like know really well that I would be like, I need a favor. Can I talk to you?
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you think? What's your definition of network? Because you have a big article I hear, an Hispanic executive or something.
You know, it's interesting you should ask because I've reflected on this over the years. And similar to you, it took me a good amount of time to convince myself that I wanted to network. But what I did was define it for myself and on my terms. And that's allowed me to really build more a sense of community because I think network can sound a bit detached and transactional. So for me, when I say network, I mean being authentic in my interactions with people and having a purpose and being of service if I can without expecting anything in return, right? So lending my time, my support, my energy, knowing that I can make a positive difference and just allowing myself to help someone. To me, that's networking. It may be putting someone in touch with a contact. It might be sitting for 15, 20 minutes, coaching up on an interview. It could mean different things. So I've decided to define it for myself and really being purposeful. And for me, you know, networking is not transactional, it's intentional. I also believe in understanding the humanity of people. So I love to learn, you know, what ticks them, what their background is, what excites them, and maybe ways we can partner in the future based on any commonality. So I've, like you, I've had similar thoughts about networking. I think of it in terms of community now, and that just makes me feel more authentic and more inclusive because I prefer to be that than transactional. So I hear you on the networking piece.
Yeah, I think your definition is people I serve.
Yeah.
And that just completely transformed. I kind of like feel similar, right? In the sense is like, if I haven't had a chance to have that level,
right,
then I feel you're not in my network because I feel like I haven't done anything for you. Like, I feel like I always want to do something for you first before I ask. Right. I do ask. I am a little bit of a quid pro quo, to be honest, right?
Yeah.
in the sense of like, look, I'll do for you, you know, and then do something. And, right. And other people, somebody was telling me like, you know, white people are more like, we're going to be friends. We're going to be networked. You can come and ask me first or I can come and ask you first, but that's like this prearranged agreement. I don't know. Right. Somebody told me this. She was Indian. She's Indian, right? And then I, Elias, you on the other hand, you want to first like serve, connect, feel like you have this built up credit, yeah, you know, before like, and then you do for people and then you get disappointed when people like just do not understand the agreement, right? And
right.
What do you think about that? I'm just saying what I
feel, right? I tend to be an empath. So when someone reaches out, right, and they are asking for something, whatever that is if I'm part of their network, I'm sincere in trying to understand what they need. And if I can help in any way, then I try to, right? And it's not a big, elaborate process. It could be something quick. I think it's important to put ourselves in the shoes of the people who are asking or networking. It's the psychology of it. Like, there's a reason behind this. And so if I can be clear on that reason, and if I don't get something in return, I'm actually okay with that because the reward is knowing that I did something positive as best as I could. So for me, it's just owning the process and what I want to get out of it. And what I want to get out of it is knowing that I was of service if I could. And if I can't, then I'm honest about that as well. And I might route them to, you know, different opportunities or contacts. So I think it's just owning it and redefining it. Like when someone says network, I don't think about it the way I used to originally, which is I think the way you and I both thought about it. I think in terms of how I define a community, being of service to each other, learning, partnering, and it's just more invigorating. A network is, I think, a hangover term that that isn't very appealing to those of us who like that sense of community and warmth.
Yeah, it want more depth, right? And I think, but one of the things that irks me right now is like, it's a huge pet peeve of mine when people come and ask for something and it's not clear the ask.
Oh, yes.
Or they just come, they never met me and they're like, can you do this for me? And I'm like, this is kind of what I mean by quid pro quo, right? You can't just show up and say like,
right,
give me this. Pay me this.
Absolutely.
Give me this job. Introduce me to this person. And I'm like, can you give me, like, I don't understand why there's so many stupid people that send this message on LinkedIn that they're like, hey, I just connected on LinkedIn with you. We should grab coffee and see what's going on, you know? And I'm just like, what? Who says that? Like, give a reason.
Like, I think there's a general, like what I would call like etiquette and protocol to follow, right? Like there's some people who are completely comfortable for a variety of reasons, just cold turkey making those requests. I don't know if part of it is culture or something else, but I hear what you're saying. I've had people reach out to me in similar fashion saying, hey, I'd like to ask you a few questions. Here's my calendar if you want to check for my availability. I actually don't respond to those, you know, because I'm already unclear on what the request is. There are assumptions being made about my availability. So I just think that, you know, common courtesy, etiquette, protocol are very basic things that sometimes people, maybe they're pressed for what they need and forget about these fundamentals, but it's really important, right? It's part of your brand, I think.
We haven't even talked about career stuff. So you get this big shot MBA, Duke, this, that, Pierce. How does that, boom, transforms, you know, what did you make out of that?
Yeah, I so also a career switcher. So as I shared earlier, I started off in the public sector after college, and it was really through, you know, the dynamics of coursework like in strategy, innovation, consumer insight, psychology, that I found the most exciting. And for me, all those attributes I found in the marketing field. And so that has been my passion. And I've been able to, as a marketer, create value propositions and solve problems that serve customers, which is my passion point. And it goes back to the earlier point of being of service to others while being creative, strategic, analytical. So I love the diversity of the marketing field. And I've been fortunate to do it across several industries and Fortune 500 companies and Wall Street. So that is what my career trajectory has been since I left Southgate.
Yeah. And I love marketing. I think marketing is so hard. I hate everything in marketing, you know, and everything that you see that comes out, it's like, I see this B2B software conferences, the stages and this like presenters, and I just like, blah, it's like, I can't deal with any of this stuff. It's like, I call it, you know, I saw a keynote yesterday and it was like, boomer content. That was just so boring, you know.
It's a very broad field, and so I think this goes back to like an individual why and a how you want to market. And so I think there are a variety of options. That's what I love about marketing as well. It's pretty diversified field within the field.
I'm saying, but everybody just kind of copies each other, right? And just it's like it's hard to like stand out. What area of marketing did you end up doing?
I would call it growth marketing, which is really beginning to end. You know, they call it the top of the funnel, you know, raising awareness for the brand down through the selling of the product and the service within the end is what we're aiming for, impacting the P&L as closely as I can, largely across financial services. It's an area that I'm passionate about. I think it makes a big difference in people's lives. It's one of the most intimate transactions one can have is in financial services. So that's been where I spent the majority of my career.
One of those is Amex, right?
Yeah, Amex.
I mean, it's traditionally a very well-respected company, right? I mean,
phenomenal company, really proud alum. Interesting story, really briefly. When I was in college, I really wanted to go to Costa Rica for spring break with my friends, but I didn't really have a whole lot of cash, right? I had a part-time job in the cafeteria to buy books and stuff, but I didn't have any credit. So I said, you know, I'm going to apply for the green, the basic Amex card. And I'll never forget this experience. It's one of the main reasons why I wanted to work for them. They treated me with such respect as they would any other customer, even though I wasn't a high net worth customer. And I always remembered that experience. And they gave me my first credit card. So I was able to go to Costa Rica. At business school, it was top of my list for where I wanted to work and had a great run with the company over a decade. And I can't emphasize enough what a phenomenal company it is, truly. You talk about a company that lives its values, and they're not paying me for this commercial. It really is a really highly regarded company, and I can speak to that firsthand. So a tremendous marketing machine for sure, which is where I spent my time across different divisions and client relationship, brand marketing, retention, customer relationship management, launched the Platinum card in Central America, actually. So that was a career highlight. I was really honored to have done that. And the company, you know, entrusted me to do that. So really great run at Amex for sure.
You went back to Costa Rica with the Platinum?
Actually, years later. Yeah, years later.
It's funny. I had a similar experience too. When I first immigrated, you know, I was 17 and my mom. That was an amazing year for me because 1993 in December, because I dreamed all my life as a teenager to have a car and I couldn't afford it. And my mom came and like, we came in and she was like, we gotta settle. We gotta like adapt. And she's like, buys a car for like $900. And then a few weeks later, she hands it to me and she's like, this is your car. You're going to have to go to school. I can't take you. You know, I'm working. And then she bought another car and so I was like, I just like quickly accelerating and all these things. And one of them is I went to the bank with her to open an account. And it was, you know, Nations Bank, Bank of America.
Yeah.
It's so like, and So I ended up working through Inroads. I don't know if you know Inroads. I did Inroads and I worked at Nations Bank. So that awesome. Same experience, I showed up. I think I probably think like might have dressed up, you know, like I was like, it's a serious thing. I was like, my signature and like this thing, I'm getting a bank account.
That's awesome.
Which is in fact to this day my bank account, one of my bank accounts, right? It's still the same number. I had it all modified it, and it was like, and I remember being like, how many years? Because on the checkbook it said how many years. So and then I worked there and got to see the company and grew from within, and then ended up switching to IBM, which was another little memory of mine from Nicaragua. There was a building that said IBM in it, and I like connected and I said, what is that?
I think, in the Latino community, and we know this, we're fiercely loyal to the brands and to the businesses that are loyal to us and or take a chance on us. So I have a similar story just briefly. Washington Mutual at the time, now Chase, have had that account since I was, I think, 16, 17 years old. Exact same number for the same reasons. Phenomenal customer service, even through acquisition. So we're fiercely loyal, I think, as a consumer base for sure.
Wow. Yeah. No, this is since 1993. It's 30 years later. I had that bank account. Right. And it's like, that's awesome. Right. There's some, people need to understand and get to know Latinos. Right.
Yeah.
Loyalty is my number one thing from people. When I say quid pro quo, when I say it's like, I expect when my loyalty is broken,
I'm a diehard loyalist. I'm the same thing, the same way.
You just break my heart. You can do anything you want. Loyal. You can joke, you can hit me, you can push me, you can take my money, you can do it.
But don't break my trust and loyalty. Yeah, I'm right there with you. It's like my number one thing in terms of values, fiercely loyal. Family, friends, employers, neighbors. Just, again, the way I was raised, I suppose.
Are we like brothers and sisters?
Right? Same values, same neighborhoods.
I like saying everything. No. Speaking of values, right? So we have to be real. We have to be ourselves. Let's talk about values and share to people about yourself.
Right? Sure. In terms of my values, and I know I keep going back to my family, but it really is a reflection of my parents. And to this day and throughout, my life, personally, professionally, values in no particular order, they're all equally important. As basic as it sounds, being kind and respectful, even when you're not the recipient of that treatment, I think it's just a value that I hang on to, and I'm better for it. Not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but I try to live that as best as I can. Second thing is a person of integrity. I've never negotiated my integrity, never will. I think that's really important to stick to what I believe in, knowing what's right from what's wrong, and also helping others. We talked about that, simply because we can, and not necessarily expecting anything in return, but trying to make a positive impact, I think, brings me joy and satisfaction in life. And working hard for what I believe in. So I'm a firm believer in work ethic and discipline. I think it's served me well. Hopefully it's not a lost art. You mentioned earlier about the workforce and different generations. And so I'm a huge believer in working hard for what you believe in and for what you want and earning it.
I'm going to try to be nice, not that I really want to defend the new generation so much. Like, I just want to make it clear to everybody, I'm not trying to be like politically correct, right? But the truth is that everybody's losing agency, right? It's like at all ages, just, nobody wants to work, I think it's a little bit of a burnout.
Do you think it's just a lot of noise? Is it a function of technology, social media? Because I've reflected on something similar, by the way. Yeah. And it's top of mind for me whenever I'm in conversations about work and what drives us and our why. I just think there's a lot of noise, and having the discipline to tune it out is lacking sometimes. And I'm speaking in generalities.
I agree. I think noise is the right word, in the sense that we're bombarded with so many images and pressure, and the whole world collapsed into like a single place. And so I think it's an exhaustion. Right?
It is. It really is.
Of like, what, like, for us, living in that neighborhood, like I think we were so happy with so little, right? And
that's
I mean,
right.
I don't know. When I was there, hold on. But like, when I was in that San Vicente, like that home to me was like unbelievable. I
mean, same.
I mean, it was an incredible home. Like, so
yeah.
Let's not make confused people, right? Like,
yes.
I went back not too long ago and I was like, yeah, nothing has happened there. But when yeah. I was there, they were kind of newish, right?
Yeah.
And so those homes were like, beautiful homes.
Absolutely.
Right? And so like I was very fortunate. My father had done well in some of the businesses and stuff that he had done. But where was I going with this? Oh, is that regardless, like there was not like I had no images of Monaco. I had no images
yes.
of like, you know, Mill Valley. I had no so my mind was pure and it
yes.
was just. And so that's the noise, I think, that we're talking about, right?
Right?
Of like,
right.
And so I think there's a lot of noise. Then you get exhausted. And then the inequality is larger and then you get to see it. And so I think people lose energy and momentum and
yeah.
I think they don't listen to themselves. I think that us coming from the bottom allows us to value everything I have.
That's right.
You know what I mean? And I think, yeah, I was just in Monaco with like crazy people on a yacht watching the Grand Prix, villas in Antibes and this and that. And it's like, you know what? It was like, it's cool, you know, but it's like, I don't care. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like, I did it. It's like, great, blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't fill my soul, right? It doesn't,
right.
It's like, I don't need it. So it doesn't affect my noise,
right?
You know, I'm tuning it out. I go, I enjoy it, I appreciate. I'm like, who am I that I'm like, you know, in this little boat being dropped off at this yacht, you know, in the harbor to watch the race, right? And it's like, but so it's like I appreciate it, but I also don't long for it. I also
right.
don't need it, you know. But it's very hard to be in that position, especially if you're younger and just grow up and you're just
right.
watching all of that on Instagram.
Right. I mean, I definitely didn't have, probably similar to you, all this social media, all this bombardment.
Yeah.
I mean, thankfully, actually, and I'm grateful that I didn't because it would be a different dynamic. It allowed me to concentrate, focus, keep things simple, and be grateful for what I did have. So, yeah, it's
yeah.
a different time for sure.
Different time. We have to be thankful we have that. And we just, you know, at the school, my kids that we have, I was having a big discussion with my high schooler, just graduated this year, and we were talking about it, about agency, and because they read all my LinkedIn posts and
mm-hmm.
and they were like, and I said, I just don't see the kids having the same agency, you know what I mean? It's like some of my kids do sometimes, they're like, I don't know what I want to do, you know?
Yeah.
And I maybe I didn't know what I was going to do or exactly what was it, but I knew I wanted to work.
Right.
You know, I was like, just give me anything, you know. I see that less. And so now they're hitting me up for a donation to create a program about developing agencies. So they're like, I'm like, oh my God, they got me. But I said, how do we develop that? So that was the last night I was there. They asked me,
yeah.
is that something that can be taught?
Right. I do think there's something to be said about, I'm a firm believer that less is more. I've always had an appreciation for the elegance of simplicity. And I just think
yeah.
that there's just too much of everything today to the point where people can't make choices. And I think that's part of what's causing the lack of agency. There's just too many options. But I think there's also something to be said about wanting to earn something because there's a reward in
yeah.
having the discipline to work hard and to know that you did something to achieve it versus it was handed to you or it was easily gathered. It's a mindset. And I would say, you know, difference in discipline.
Yeah. No, I But what do you think? Do you think we can teach it? Or is it born?
I think we can teach it and I think we can role model it. I'm sure you've experienced this as well here in New York when I'm in the subway. I try to use my phone not too much unless I need to. Actually, that's my way of staying connected and grounded to what really matters. But just about every single person on the subway has their phone on. Their family's having dinner with their phones in hand. So I think role modeling the behaviors consistently is an important action to take. Not an easy one for some
people. That's a little bit self-control, but what about agency? What about that, like, I want to do something. I want to make a decision for myself. How do we grow that?
Self-awareness and
you're talking about all these hard words. it's like
I mean it takes work, right? And it's not easy, right? Reflecting for some people, it's journaling for some people, is asking them with a blank sheet of paper what matters to you, what excites you, and then honing it in to make it into something tangible and actionable. A lot of people actually don't spend time doing that at all. I think a lot of people are on autopilot, not just, you know, this generation, but other generations as well.
Yeah.
Because that kind of reflection and transformation can be a challenge, right? We're seeking answers where sometimes those answers don't come to us instantaneously. And it's a society of instant gratification these days. So I think reflection, having honest conversations, knowing your values and your purpose, that doesn't necessarily happen overnight. Those are serious questions and not everyone is equipped to answer, right? It could be a little scary. They're deep questions.
No, I think you said it in the way that, that definitely hit home for me. It's like so many people are on autopilot, right? And it's like, how do they wake up from that? And so I'm just so thankful every day that I was like, I'm so highly aware of like, the attempt that I'm making in like recording this with Elizabeth, with you, and just being like, okay, like I was driving, I was running around and I was like, we want to do another podcast for the company. And I'm like, do I have time to do this? And it's like, and it just says, no, I'm going to go do it. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like, compared to other people, I was just autopilot, not knowing why and not being motivated to do what they do, or like just following whatever is next on the calendar, but instead of choosing and deciding and wanting to do it.
Yeah. We're surely grateful for it and the conversations and your intent, honestly, your why, right? Which is to highlight stories that are not always highlighted or that are a little bit different from the norm. So thank you for bringing that to life.
Yeah, we don't have many of these things. I don't think it gets highlighted enough. So thank you so much. Very nice meeting you.
Great to meet you as well. I can't believe we're both have roots in Southgate and several other things in common. So definitely a small world for sure.
Thank you for listening to the American Dream Podcast. Make sure to subscribe so you never miss when a new episode drops every other Tuesday.